Hello and good morning to everybody. Hope you're all having a wonderful Wednesday. Welcome to the program. I'm Charlie Arnold. Now, we've been talking about Caitlin Clark and how phenomenal she is all week long. We've been talking about it for weeks now, and you know, there are various cases in which an athlete transcends the sports in which they play, and Caitlin Clark, no doubt the latest example of that. She alone drew so much attention to women's collegiate basketball with her out-of-this-world ability, and as a result, the women's national championship game, despite not being played in prime time, it was 3 o'clock on a Sunday, they crushed the men's title game in ratings with 18.7 million viewers versus 14.8 million viewers. That is a beatdown we have never seen before until now. Now, because of this, OutKick founder Clay Travis floated the idea that Clark draws a strong comparison to some other athletes that had the same transcendental effects on their own respective sports. Here's what he had to say.
The analogy that I would draw with her, I think there are three athletes that come to mind. One is Tiger in the world of golf, where, as you well know, tons of people who would otherwise have had no interest in golf would watch Tiger Woods. Completely. He was bigger than the sport of golf. Jordan, apologies to you as an Indianapolis person, because I know he broke the Pacers' heart. But Jordan in the 90s transcended the sport of basketball. No one else has ever come to that level. And then one other athlete, it's different because it's combat sports, but I bet you remember this very well. Ronda Rousey made women's UFC matter in a way that no one else has ever come close. And once she lost, the women's UFC has never been able to have the same level of attention. I'll give you an example. I bought multiple UFCs because of Ronda Rousey, because I wanted to watch her. I've never bought a UFC over a women's fighter ever before or since. And so those are the three athletes that to me really kind of come to mind, even though Caitlin Clark lost. I think, what is it, 18.7 million people watched. And I think 65, 70% of that audience is Caitlin Clark audience, not women's college basketball.
Now, one of the comparisons he drew to Clark was Ronda Rousey back in 2016 when she was really at her peak, at her prime. Now, was she the greatest female UFC fighter of all time? No, that honor does belong to Amanda Nunes, who held a title or even two simultaneously for 7 years until she decided to retire last summer. But as the first female champion, Rousey was the most important in women's MMA and maybe in all of women's sports. At one point, Rousey certainly became bigger than the UFC. With sports fans of all kinds, even people who didn't even watch UFC traditionally, like Clay just mentioned, tuning in to see her skills at work. Her retirement following UFC 207, when she lost to Nunes, marking her second straight loss after starting her career at 12-0, really made her absence felt. People couldn't understand why she wanted to leave, although she had her reasons. But the legacy she built is still being felt. She inspired a new generation of fighters, many of whom you see currently fighting in the promotion. And the same can be said about Caitlin Clark. She really has changed the game and drawn in an entirely new base of fans, people that didn't before watch women's basketball, myself being included. It's now time to see if that popularity translates to the WNBA upon her being drafted and how she continues to help shape the game. And most times, I will say, you earn that influence not by asking for it, but by demanding it. And that is something I absolutely see Caitlin Clark doing. And now with that, let's go ahead and bring in the guest for today's show, the man you see on this program every single Wednesday. Thank goodness, I do not know how I would get through the week without him, the host of Don't At Me, Dan Dockich. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Charlie, how are you?
I am doing well. I am, you know, it's Wednesday. I always feel like you kind of have that little Wednesday, like, how am I feeling? Check in. So you know that's it. That's the Wednesday for me so far.
Yeah. Hey. Back to Ronda Rousey real quick. I'm one of those that I found Ronda Rousey. I remember when I started reading about Ronda Rousey, and I agree. I kind of with Clay. Like I buy fights once in a while. Not all the time, but most times. And I bought a Ronda Rousey fight, and I haven't since. And, you know, I will disagree with one thing that Clay said, and he's right, but I would say this. I think women's basketball has been on the rise, and I do think that this explosion is certainly due to Caitlin Clark. But I do think it's been on the rise, and I do think it's different than Rousey in that – how do I put this right? It felt like to me, now not you because you know the sport way better than me, but it felt like Rousey kind of made the sport. I feel like Caitlin Clark enhanced the sport, took it to a new level, a sport that is going to be really good even without or not maybe the same level. So they're the same, if this even makes sense, and it doesn't, because when I hear people say it, I want to blow my head off. It's the same but different. So now I'm
same
one of
but
those
different.
People. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I do agree with what you were saying. And one of the points actually that Clay made that I didn't exactly agree with either was that, you know, because I also mentioned that Serena Williams transcended the sport, and he was like, yeah, but she had the luxury of playing at the same time as the men. So, you know, when you're at the, let's say, yeah. Arthur Ashe Stadium, for example, you have a lot of fans who are there to watch the guys play rather than the women play. And some of them are just like, oh, let's stick around and watch Serena Williams. However, I also think that, you know, Caitlin Clark had the same luxury in this tournament. You had a lot of people that just were in basketball mode and wanted to watch basketball. And so they tuned into Caitlin Clark. That's not to take away from any of her talent or what she was able to accomplish or the hype that was surrounding her. But I do agree with you that Ronda Rousey literally built the women's division. Like, without her, the women's division might not even exist in the way that it did. She was the first ever champion. So that is different in these regards. But I guess what we're just saying is Caitlin Clark, it seems, even though women's basketball is on the rise, she made us feel something that we haven't felt before when it comes to women's basketball. And that's just like a whole different level of excitement, I think. I mean, watching her take her like step back shots and watching her score 41 points in one game, watching her handle the pressure with such poise and elegance, even when she probably had all of these different types of endorsement deals, you know, kind of looking the other way at certain points when other players weren't. And I feel like she just handled herself with a lot of grace. And that's something she has a lot of maturity for her age.
She had way more maturity than I would have. Back to Serena Williams. That's an interesting comparison. I would say this. Serena Williams is the best female athlete that I've ever seen, and maybe the most dominant athlete, period, that I've ever seen. And, you know, the difference is when you're in an individual sport like tennis or like MMA or, you know, one thing about tennis is regardless of whether Serena was playing, I don't think ratings for tennis outside of the U.S. Open and Wimbledon and the Australian Open, the majors, I don't think those ratings are great. You know, people don't sit down to watch a tournament from Cincinnati. But I will say this about Caitlin Clark. People turned out in droves to go on Fox and see her play Indiana, who's a good team. Don't get me wrong, but a regular season game, Iowa against Indiana, would never be on Big Fox, number one. And number two, wouldn't be very highly rated, but it was very highly rated. So I would argue that it's different because, again, one's a team sport, one's an individual sport. A team sport with a college on it has a natural fan base, meaning Iowa across the chest has a natural fan base with alumni and current students, mm-hmm. whereas an individual sport like Rousey or Serena, you know, doesn't have that.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, I like that we're putting – I love that we're putting – Caitlin Clark in the category of legends. I mean, let's think about Rousey, a legend, Serena Williams, an all-time legend. I mean, the Mount Rushmore of women athletes. So that's pretty cool. That's actually very, very cool.
And I wonder, and I'll have a full conversation with Clay on this subject airing tomorrow. We got more into it, but I asked him, and I'll ask you the same question. Do you believe that her popularity is going to translate over into the WNBA? Because I think a lot of people can get behind college hoops, especially during March Madness, right? It's like everyone's favorite thing to do, whether or not you're watching because you're a true basketball fan or you're at a bar and that's what they're playing or, you know, they have on the TVs and you kind of get sucked in that way. Or maybe you just want to be unproductive at work and you've got your office bracket pool going.
Right.
But the WNBA is a little bit different. They've got an entire season that typically doesn't draw so much attention, especially not like the NBA does. And she's just one player still in the entire league. I don't know. Do you think that people are going to say, well, now that Caitlin Clark's in the WNBA, I'm going to become a WNBA fan?
I think there's a lot. Lynn Dunn is a legendary coach, and she's the general manager of the Indiana Fever. The Indiana Fever are going to take Caitlin Clark with the first pick here in Indianapolis. I live in Indianapolis. And I was talking to her, and you know, she can't tell me because of the rules that she's taking Caitlin Clark. But what she did say was, I'll tell you this, we have sold so many season tickets to people with Iowa area codes. It's insane. And I think this, I think the WNBA, if they're smart and if they can stand up to the woke mob and promote Caitlin Clark like the NBA promotes its stars, because that's what the NBA does. The NBA promotes stars. Like professional football, the NFL promotes the teams, the league. The NBA says, LeBron, you're a star. The shoe companies give a guy a shoe. They promote the individual. And I hope, I know the Fever are going to do that here in Indianapolis, but I hope the league as a whole does. Now, is she going to be that popular? The answer is it depends. It depends on how good she is. It depends on if the Fever win. I don't care who you are. Indiana, as you know, Charlie, Indiana's a basketball state. We love hoops, high school, college, you know. But professional sports in Indiana, the WNBA and even the NBA, people don't come out for the games if you lose. And Caitlin Clark and the Fever, if they win, absolutely. If she's a star, absolutely. But if not, the initial hit's going to be through the roof. You know, the first games are going to be crazy. I mean, but then it'll settle in, and it all comes down to one simple thing. Winning and playing really well will draw fans because we want to go see Caitlin Clark. Charlie, I had Jim Boeheim, 47-year head coach at Syracuse. Mr. College Basketball tell me yesterday, he went to Albany with his daughter just to watch Caitlin Clark. He said, I would rather watch Caitlin Clark play basketball than I would UConn play basketball, period. So people want more Caitlin Clark, but you got to play well against the best in the world. And if she does, yes. If she doesn't, it'll flatten out.
Well, that'll be fun. I have to be honest. I don't know. Actually, I have gone to a Fever game because I was covering it for work when I worked at Fox 59. But I have never, as a fan, been to a WNBA game. I mean, whether or not the tickets cost money or they were free, I just chose to never attend one. So this is cool, right? I like the fact that people are getting so into it ahead of time. And I don't think that the head coach of the Fever needs to say much more than, you know, there's a lot of people with Iowa area codes buying up our season tickets. I think that's all the evidence we might need to know where the star is going.
Yeah, Lynn was born at night, but it wasn't last night. Neither were the Fever. They understand. And to your point, I did take my daughter when my daughter was young. I did take her to a couple Fever games, and we had a blast. I've said forever, like, I had a blast. I mean, but, you know, I have a blast with my daughter because it's my daughter and I'm her dad. I have a blast with her wherever we go. But I think it's going to be fun here. Look, when you get to be my age, you know, my fat ass is just looking for something to do or looking for something to watch. So what the hell? I can't go clubbing anymore. You know, it's no longer bottle service.
Even a club would be a great site.
I'm not a bad clubber. I'm not a bad one. I get in trouble. I sneak around. I'm very, very, very stealthy. Yeah.
Well, you know, you talk about your daughter. You talk about your daughter, and I know she means a lot to you. Dan, where were you? Like, were you prepared for the birth of, because you have two children, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always ask this. Okay. Two. Was there, for either of them, were you not so prepared, like, that they were arriving so suddenly? Or, like, did you have to rearrange your plans to make sure you were at the hospital on time? Or were you pretty much set? Like, you would premeditated and had it all set in stone beforehand.
Charlie, I caught so much hell for what I'm about to say from women, from Christians, but I'm going to tell you this. I'm just going to tell you this. when I got married, or before I got married, I told my first wife, the mother of my children, that we have to have kids either in August or May. That's it. Because I'll tell you why. Because I wasn't having them during the basketball season. I was not having them when recruiting was in September and October. I was not having them when recruiting was in April. I was not having them when recruiting was in July. And summer camp, where I got paid, was in June. So I told my wife, and my wife worked in an OBGYN office, and I said, look, if we can do this, I know this catches hell, but I want my first child to be a boy if that's possible. So she got a book out, How to Choose a Sexier Baby. We read it. This is prepared now, Charlie. And we timed it. My son was born May 10th.
I want to know the details. Oh, my God. Share.
The details of How to Choose a Sexier Baby?
Yeah.
Here's what I remember, all right, without getting too gross. Okay. Anyway, my son was born in May. My daughter was born the second day of June, so we got that done. You wear socks. You drink coffee. There's a certain position that rhymes with froggy, and you and there's certain things that a man likes to do to relieve stress and pressure that you don't do for weeks beforehand, and then there was a few other things that she had to do. But the book was eight for eight, Charlie.
Is this to have a boy or to make sure that you're, like, you're inseminating properly?
No.
I'm just going to go ahead and say
it. No. to have a boy. This was to have a boy.
Oh.
And the book was eight for eight. And if you wanted to have a girl, you did something else. But so for my first child, Andrew, we got the book. My brother, when he wanted to have a boy, got the book. My sister, my friends. The book was eight for eight. And people don't believe it, right? People are like, well, my wife worked in an OBGYN office. And
wow.
That's what she got. So, yeah. So you asked me if I was prepared. I don't think there's ever been anybody more prepared than me. My son, May 10th, there was no recruiting. There was no camps. My daughter, June 2nd, a week before. I used to run a camp in my hometown for 24 years, a week before that camp was starting. So there you go. I was the most prepared human being alive. Are you kidding me? And I don't understand Scott Scheffler. I don't understand Sam Burns. What the hell are you doing? You got to plan these things. I know it's a gift from God. I get all that. I do. I swear I do. But there are ways to prepare for this, just like there are ways not to get somebody pregnant. So don't have a baby during Masters week. What are you doing? Or if you're Patrick Mahomes during the Super Bowl week, what are you doing? Figure it out.
You know, this is super interesting because it is like a reverse calculation, and a lot of people don't think that far in advance. They don't, like, their brain isn't functioning like that, where they're like, you know, if I want to avoid this week, then we probably should not be doing certain activities at this point in time because it could land us here. That is very interesting, and I've never thought about that, but thank you for segueing me into the Scotty Scheffler and Sam Burns story, because Dan, they've already reached the point where it's too late, right? Their wives are about to go into labor coinciding with the Masters. Now, it got me thinking, because if I'm the woman, if I'm their wife, one of their wives, you know, there's two ways to think about it. One, you better get your ass to this delivery room and be holding my hand through this entire, you know, crazy process. Like, you are partially responsible for this. You better see it through, right? But then there's also the other angle that you can take, and that is, kids are expensive, Dan. They're very expensive. If you can come home with a lot of money from winning the Masters, and not only do we have more money to take care of our child, but also I'm expecting now in return a really nice gift for you not being in the room with me while I'm delivering your child. I don't know. I don't know which direction I would take. They both sound like options you need to consider.
Yeah, both are reasonable. My first wife, would never, like, if my kids were going to be born during summer camp, like when I was making money, like I ran Bob Knight's basketball camps, and that was a big chunk of my salary. My wife would have said, hey, look, go to camp. The kid will still be here. I mean, but you're absolutely right. Like, you know, and she knows I'm not a big help anyway. But no, that is, and you know, in golf, the Masters is it. Like, you know, if you ask Scottie Scheffler or Sam Burns, which tournament would you like to win? The Masters is probably going to be number one. And let's be honest, you got a number of opportunities from the time, let's say you're 22 to 40, but that's only 18 of them. So this eliminates one. But, yeah. You know, look, people say this is insensitive. Look, you're married. You're married, and there's something called family planning. And to me, for me, family planning was important, at least in terms of my career. Now, blessed to have a child, I get all that. If my child would have come in the middle of the season, I'd have been great. I'd have loved, you know, fine. But if you have the option, and you know what, since my wife knew these things, you take that option. You know, again, it's not like, how do I put this delicately? It's not like you're, you know, some single guy going around stooping everything that walks and all of a sudden you have a kid. You know, it's not that. You're married. You can figure this out. So that's my stance. I know it's wrong. It's not the Christian way. I get it. But that's just my view on that. Let's put it that way. You shouldn't have a child during the Masters. You should be smarter than that.
I am not concerned with the Christian way. I like Dan's way. I am totally on board with the family planning. I think that if you have the resources, like a wife who's an OBGYN who can help to route you in the direction of the sex of the child that you want to have, and it actually turns out to be true, awesome also. So, wow, I feel very inspired by you, Dan. I feel very inspired after that conversation.
Yeah. This shocked you. You just thought I was a meathead that was going to say, yeah, well, you're having a baby. What the hell? Have the baby. I don't care. No. There's a depth to this bald, fat head, lady. There's a depth to this right here.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, now that we're on the subject of talking about children and what's best for them and helping to guide their lives, Dan, did you see Aoki Simmons? It's the daughter of Kimora Lee Simmons and, what's his name? The guy that created FUBU, Russell Simmons. Russell Simmons and Kimora Lee Simmons. They have a 21-year-old daughter. Her name is Aoki Simmons. She was seen gallivanting this past week. It was all over Page Six, New York Post. She was seen with a 65-year-old billionaire. So 21 years old, 65 years old. And of course, her parents are being come to by all these media outlets. What do you think about it? And at first they took like a really soft stance, like, you know, it's her life, whatever she wants to do. And then her mother came back with like a little bit more outrage, but her dad was still kind of chill about it. But he also was with Kimora when she was much younger. Like there was a strange age gap there as well. So I'm not sure he's one to talk. But Dan, what would you do? Because I put myself in this position. I'm like, if my father saw me dating, I'm 21 and I was with a 65-year-old man, he would go ballistic. I mean, he would be like, what the hell is going on here? Why are you with this old guy? Are you being held hostage? Now, granted, the guy's, like I said, he's a billionaire restaurateur. But what would you do? Like, if this situation were put into your orbit?
Well, first of all, as a 60-year-old man, we know stuff. Let me just put it to you that way. We know stuff. And you know what? And it's good stuff. It's really good stuff. And I don't know. I have a friend who's doing the opposite. My friend's brother, who is 63, is marrying a 26-year-old, and the whole family's up in arms because, well, he's
a
doctor.
Wait, what's the age gap there?
Huh?
What's the age gap there?
Was she
accepting? You were just talking, you said. No. You said what? The two you were just referring to, you said there's 23-year-old and how old's the other?
Well, my friend's brother is 63. She's 25 or 27.
Okay.
And they're
going to
get married.
I missed the ages.
And, yeah, I'm sorry. And my friend's family is all upset with their brother for marrying a 20-something-year-old, and they want to have kids. Look, I thought love is love. Every time I see somebody, it's love is love, baby. And what's not to love about the 60-something-year-old crowd? You know, 60 is the new 30. and we know stuff. We've been there, done it probably 20 times and probably with farm animals at different times. You just never know. So the idea, I would be mortified. I'd be telling my daughter, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, look, if you're in your 30s, fine, whatever. But God dang, 21 years old, let's not do that. I love the fact that you said, is she being held hostage? That's pretty funny to me. Like, hey, my daughter's name is Laura. Hey, Laura, are you in a dungeon? Like, what's going on here? I need to see your face. Yeah, I wouldn't be too thrilled with that. And the reason, let me clarify this, though. The reason I wouldn't be too thrilled by it is I have a tendency, again, I know I'm like this dorky meathead guy, but I have a tendency, I call it looking beyond my, I'll call it nose for the purpose of this show. Look beyond your nose. And I've tried to explain to my kids, you got to look beyond your nose. You got to look at the future. You got to look, okay, this dude's going to be 80 when you're 35. You want to deal with that? You want to be dealing with diapers? You want to be dealing with slop? No, you don't. Nobody does. So stop. And it wouldn't work for a minute or two, but then it would. But the other side, of course, is love, baby. Love is love. You love who you love. And as my friend Fred says, who married a 340-pound woman, he said, Danny, oh, I like what I like. So there you go. You like what you like. What are you going to do?
You know, more cushion for the, you know, whatever we were talking about earlier in the conversation.
Yeah.
Good for your friend. Good for the old guy marrying the young girl. Yeah, my dad would not go for this. Hold on.
Now this is a true story. When I was divorced at like 49, I moved to the head of the line because I had a job, right? And I had a job that people knew about. So I had, and I'm not bragging here, okay? I'm not. But I'm just telling you the reality. I had women of all ages throwing themselves at me. High school girls that never talked to me that all of a sudden are on Facebook, 28-year-old, 25, and I'm like, all right, let's see here. And I realized that with my personality, I'm not one of those guys that would be comfortable around a 21, 23-year-old woman at my age. Now, maybe, yeah, obviously when I was 21 and when I was 16, that was the dream, right? But I'm just saying, I'm not like some guys can. Some guys and some girls can. You know, some women like to date younger men, but I there's a certain age where you're like, all right, there's nothing to talk about. This is kind of stupid. What are we doing here? And I would hope that my daughter would figure that out. Let's put it to you that way.
Yeah, and I think it has to do with maturity levels as well. Like, some men are less mature, and therefore they identify more, you know, and are able to get along better with young, very young women. And then on the flip side, there's some young women who are more mature and able to probably understand an older guy better. And sometimes they meet in the middle and it just makes sense, but other times it clearly makes no sense. And the, I guess, motives are very understood and clear, even from a bystander's perspective. And I believe this one was one of those situations. But Dan, let's move on, because one of your good friends is taking a shot at OutKick's Dan Krzyzewski. Jemele Hill is saying that he's just trolling by asking the simple question, do biological men belong in women's sports? And I know, I've heard through the grapevine, you've got a big take on this one coming up on your show.
Well, the thing is, Dan did it absolutely right, and Jemele Hill doesn't like it because, frankly, she doesn't like anything. And we like, and Jemele Hill and others like it when it's smooth and easy, but what Dan did was perfect. I've been in these situations. It's a day off. It's not after a game. Had Dan asked the question of Dawn Staley after a game, hey, look, what do you think about transgender men playing with women? Then that would have been like, all right, that's stupid. Don't do that. But this was the biggest celebration of women's sports. And frankly, this is the biggest issue facing women's sports as we move forward. What are you supposed to do? Wait until, you know, I think there's 35 or something like that, transgender people playing women's sports. What are you supposed to wait till it's 305? No, Dan asked a very appropriate question. I thought Dawn Staley handled it really poorly. I thought that Dawn Staley did not handle it and wasn't ready for it, where she should have been, and it's not Dan's fault. If you're going to celebrate women's sports and you're going to have a discussion on an off day, then guess what? That's an appropriate question to ask. Now, Jemele Hill didn't like it because in my world, I would guess it's African-American woman that's catching a lot of hell. Dawn Staley caught a lot of hell, and she should catch a lot of hell. Hey, look, Charlie, if you're the most powerful, you're the biggest voice in women's sports, or at least in women's basketball, you should protect women's sports, particularly when you're talking about women's sports. That was the topic. And Jemele Hill can kiss my backside with all of this. You know, she doesn't like it because the answer was stupid. A woman of color got, you know, butchered in the media, got crushed in the media. They came after her. They cut her up. They went at, you know, they just vilified her. And they don't like it. It has nothing to do with the truth. It has nothing to do with the fact that this is a legitimate question that's only going to get asked more and more, and it should. And I got no respect for it. I hate even talking about Jemele Hill because she's so on the fringes and just picks and chooses where she can inject her stupidity. That's my biggest problem. But Danny Z asked a great question, and one that everybody in America is eventually going to want the answer to. And 90% of people have already said, we don't want biological males playing against women. So it's time for women, particularly the people like Dawn Staley or like Ronda Rousey or like eventually Caitlin Clark, maybe not now. They're going to have to stand up because their voices need to be heard and their voices have strength to them. And if they can't, then you're going to – what are you going to do? Like I'm sorry to ramble on, Charlie, but here's what – here's basically – and don't think this is crazy. Because 10 years ago, the idea of men playing women's sports would have been considered crazy. What Dawn Staley said was, if you feel like a woman, you should play. And the question was specifically about women's basketball. So what she's saying is – eventually, Ike and Dan Dockage play for Indiana on Tuesday on the men's team against Purdue. Then what she's saying is on Thursday, hell, I feel like a woman. I feel like a woman today. I identify today as a woman. I'm going to go play on the IU women's team against Purdue's women. I know that sounds crazy, but 10 years ago, it would have been crazy to even have this conversation, Charlie. Women need to stand the hell up, particularly women with power in women's sports need to stand the hell up on this.
Well, right, especially for someone like Dawn Staley, who would not be in the position she's in or have all of the money that she has if she would have been confronted with the idea of playing with biological men. So, you know, of all people, to not take a strong stance about this is really disappointing. But I got to be honest, I didn't expect her to take anything other than what she did because I know the NCAA has their own strong stance on it, and I think that... given the position she's in right now, she was not willing or ready to go to war with the NCAA. Maybe at some point she changes her tune, or even if she already believes it in her mind, hopefully one day she makes that public because we definitely need people like her who have the influence like her to be standing up for women at this point in time. So, yeah, that was definitely disappointing. But once again, like you said, hats off to Dan Z for asking the question. I think Clay said it's racked up like something like tens of millions of views at this point. I think one point yesterday it had already racked up like 30 million views. So we're probably even increased from there. So that's awesome news for him, for OutKick, and of course the fight to save women's sports. So Dan, as always, you are a delight, you're a pleasure, and I gotta reiterate our conversation that we started the show off with once we got into your baby making dealings. I'm inspired, and that's really the only way I can put it into words. So thank you for sharing that.
when you're ready, I'll mail you the book. Let's just put it that way.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Hand me downs. Love them.
OutKick the Morning will be right back after a short break. Stay tuned.
Okay, well, if you are already a parent or, you know, somebody that's around kids, you've probably heard of the game Scrabble or even adults. I mean, that's definitely an adult game too, right? It kind of goes throughout the age ranges. You don't have to be a certain age to know how to throw down some tiles and make a word. Well, now after 75 years of this game remaining ultra traditional, Scrabble is now launching a new version Because, you know, they just don't feel like Gen Z can handle the good old Scrabble game that we all knew and loved. Listen to the details of this new game. They're calling it Scrabble Together. So what's going to happen is they're still going to sell the board game. One side will be traditional Scrabble. You flip it over. It's called Scrabble Together. It's going to include helper cards. Use a simpler scoring system. Be quicker to play and allow people to play in teams. Because like I said, sometimes, you know, getting some tiles and throwing them down is just too difficult. But what really is, this is just showing this less competitive version with the appeal to Gen Z gamers is just how we're really wearing kid-proof gloves with everything we do with Gen Z. We want to make the game less intimidating because we don't want them to feel threatened, right? We want them to feel included, and being more inclusive is actually a word that the new Scrabble game is incorporating into its narrative here. They want it to be more inclusive for people. Giles Brandeth, who co-hosts the language podcast Something Rhymes with Purple, she told BBC Radio that the makers of Scrabble found that younger people, Gen Z people, don't quite like the competitive nature of Scrabble. They want a game where you can simply enjoy language, words, being together, and have fun creating words. So does this mean we're going to allow them to throw down whatever word they want? They can just make up their own word, just like they've kind of made up an entirely new English language to identify with certain pronouns or non-gender conforming ideas. I don't know. This whole game is ridiculous. We don't need to change every last thing to appeal and accommodate Gen Z. This is a board game. I don't know what's next. Are we going to play a non-confrontational game of football where you have to ask someone's permission to throw the ball to them or ask them politely if they wouldn't mind running into the end zone to score? This is what the world is coming to. We have created an ultra-soft generation, and I don't see it getting any better. I only see it getting worse, because if we have to change Scrabble, what else are we going to have to change next? Okay, everybody, for those of you with kids out there, tough love. That's what they need. They do not need to be made any softer than they actually are. Everyone, this has been such a delight. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you once again to Dan Dockett, who is here every single Wednesday, and I am oh so grateful for that. Make sure before tomorrow's episode drops here on Outkick.com, you're following me on social media at Charlie on TV. And on that note, everybody, have a great Wednesday. If you're not already awake, wake up, and I'll see you tomorrow.